pines where the sun never shines. You'll shiver when the cold wind blows. There's a grave in the pines where the sun never shines. There's a grave that's shaded with the pines.
On the Slay Queens podcast, we take a deep dive into the dark side of the rainbow.
This isn't just a cheesy catchphrase. It is a note to remember that the topics we discuss can be very graphic and lurid in nature. Listener discretion has been advised.
Surprise, bitches.
Bet you thought you'd heard The Last of Us this week.
Yes, but we're here.
Was that Madison Montgomery enough?
I
That's her name, right?
Yes, I love her. I love Emma Roberts in any role.
Emma Roberts is amazing. And I mean, let's be honest here. Uh-huh. That was the best season of American Horror Story to date.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that character made it, honestly, like, funny.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
oddly
she was
funny.
She was that bitch that you love to hate.
Mm, that's exactly right.
And it
right.
was so amazing.
That's exactly right.
Speaking of bitches that you love to hate.
Yes, that was good.
Hi, Ashley.
Hi.
Oh, no.
Rude.
No, you were supposed to throw it back on me.
Whatever. Hi, Wayne.
You know I love you more than ice cream.
That's big.
And that's a lot. Ooh, that's significant for me. Have you seen my waistline?
Oh.
Especially since 2020.
Yeah, definitely.
So, surprise, folks. It's out of the ordinary that you would be hearing from us at this date, at this time, at this juncture.
That's
at this juncture.
Very good. Yes.
Yes. But surprise, we are so happy to be here with you queens, kings, and folks. And we've got something extraordinary.
Extraordinary, exciting. Yeah.
And just kind of amazing. But we're not going to spoil it just yet. It's going to happen serendipitously, organically, if
That's
you will.
That's right. We're going to let it happen the right way. Let's not spoil the surprise right less than 2 minutes in, right?
Yeah.
Got to leave some titillating parts.
A little bit of teaser. Okay. So since this is a special bonus episode, we are just going to jump right in, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to bother with any business. We're just going to jump right in because I think you will all be as excited and titillated.
Thank you for using it properly.
Yes, I do what I can. Just as much as we are.
Yes.
So, Ashley.
Yes, please lead us off because you've got a great...
How ready are we for this?
I'm literally just like, please, just go ahead.
Just do it.
Just start.
Do it. Okay. Today's show takes us back to one of our most favorite places, the HLN network. Mm-hmm. We will be diving into the Vengeance series. According to CNNCreativeMarketing.com, Vengeance is an HLN original series about revenge, betrayal, and murder. In its newest season, Killer Millionaires, viewers get to follow 10 true life mysteries through all the twists and turns that lead to arrests, verdicts, and justice.
And murder.
This crime that we are actually discussing is featured on the episode titled Fatal Fortune, which is the 10th installment of the series, and that is premiering on January 24th of 2021. Did everybody catch that?
Does anybody know what day it is?
January 24th of 2021.
It sure is.
As in today?
Yeah.
Like right now?
Like right this moment.
All right. The premiere date for this episode is the same date and time that we are dropping this extraordinary bonus episode into your feed.
I'm pretty proud of us for that, though.
Maybe they're wondering, Ashley, just how these shenanigans are possible.
Yes. Are you wondering? Even if you're not, you're going to find out.
Yeah, right now. Well, an unbelievable opportunity was given to us by the fabulous folks over at the HLN Network. We were allowed access to the screener for this particular episode more than 1 week before its premiere date.
I feel such like a VIP and I love it.
I feel so fancy.
Right?
Like Reba and all.
Oh, yes.
We couldn't wait to share this mind-blowing experience with all of you. We're going to recap this brand new episode that like 99.9% of you will not have seen yet.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there will be like that one person that's like, oh, I woke up this morning because I knew it was coming out. You know what I mean?
Exactly. That being said, there will be spoilers.
Yes.
If you want to catch the show first, head on over to HLN now, but come right back here after because sis... This one's a doozy, and you're gonna want to talk about it.
We have some stuff to talk about.
Yes. And just as a quick side note, since this is a brand new episode, it's not yet available to stream on YouTube, Netflix, Hulu, etc. But you can go to hlntv.com and click on the How to Watch banner at the top of the page.
Very good.
So we have an answer for everything.
We do. We do. I was just trying to think. I was like mulling around. Like, is there anything else that we might have to throw in there? But I think you covered all of it. You're really good at that. Good job.
I mean, I have
very good
my moments.
You're put together and I love it.
I mean, I did shower today.
Ooh, yes.
Are we ready to dive into this?
I'm so ready. So ready.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about this as well. Here we go. Opening the episode, we immediately get this emotional roller coaster that comes in the form of a perfect 60-second overview of the entire story, which I loved that they did.
Mm-hmm, me too.
And rather than recap the recap, since we're going to recap the whole episode, let me just tell you that it grabbed my attention.
For sure.
Yeah. I'm piecing together a few different statements here, but this is when the producers really had me. Quote, they were a wealthy, unconventional couple in a marriage built to last until a night of horror destroyed their life together. His stomach had exploded and his guts were spilling out. It just went from a picturesque beauty to violence and bad deeds very quickly. What dark impulse led to such violence?
And when they even said, like, his stomach had exploded, I was like, girl, what? That's violent. Yeah. What happened? What happened?
It was completely at that point that
so
I was
so good
that I was like, "Hi, Sharon. Yeah, I'm gonna need you to hold all of my phone calls until after lunch. Yes. I'll be unavailable. Okay, thanks. Bye."
Yes, I am totally like indisposed right now.
Yeah, totally, completely indisposed. They had me. Gal.
Nobody talked to me.
Yeah. Next, it's October 2nd of 1999 in West Lake Hill, Texas, which we learn is a very affluent, very upscale, very low-crime suburban area just outside of Austin, Texas.
I have a lot of emotional attachments to the areas involved in this case, actually, because okay. They mention Austin, they mention Travis County,
okay,
and later they'll mention San Antonio, and all of those places are near and dear to my heart. I mean, I imported my fiancé from San Antonio. She lived in Austin. My best friend lives in Austin.
Yeah, so shout out to all those people.
Yeah, that's my emotional attachments. Yeah. With, aww, like you and your Memphis, you know?
Yes, yes, love that for us.
Yes. Anyways, all right, continue.
So we learn that not only is this an upscale, like affluent, low crime community, that there are very few like actual service calls there at all. So not only is the crime low, it's a quiet enough community that there aren't even a significant amount of like fire service or EMS calls. But on that particular night, or that particular early morning rather, it would prove to be quite out of the ordinary. Now we meet, I was just kind of glancing back over at my notes. We meet sweet, precious angel baby, Travis County Sheriff Sergeant Gregory Truitt.
Adorable.
And bless his heart, Ashley.
I am with you.
Just bless his adorable, sweet baby so angel fresh heart. And I mean that actually in the most southern way possible.
Mm-hmm.
And you understand what I mean by that?
I do.
And I think everybody else is going to start to understand what I mean by that. We're going to see why just in a bit. But for right now, we meet Sergeant Truitt, and he explains that he was on duty at approximately 3 a.m. on the date in question when he was called to the scene due to reports of a man having woken up to find that his guts were coming out of his stomach.
Yeah, that got me too. And I'm like, what the hell happened?
Yeah. And people just like keep saying it. And uh-huh. I'm like, you're salting the wound.
That's exactly yeah. right. That's exactly yeah. right. I'm like, come on, just tell us what happened.
Yeah. An ambulance was also dispatched to that scene with Officer Truitt, or Sergeant Truitt rather. So shout out to EMTs and paramedics. We would do that every time we have the opportunity. Sergeant Truitt arrives first, followed by another officer whose name we actually don't get. The scene is a very nice large home on a big secluded tract of land. And I had to look up what a tract of land was just to mm-hmm. make sure that I was using that terminology correctly. It is actually a thing. I'm not going to give the definition because I didn't write it down. But
it's definitely a word. Yeah,
but
okay.
A tract of land is definitely a thing. It's like a large open space, essentially, if I'm remembering that correctly. At me if I'm wrong, somebody.
Yeah.
They knock on the door and they get no answer. So then they, of course, begin to search the perimeter of the property. This is when we begin to see why Sergeant Truitt is such a sweet angel baby whose heart needs just so, so many blessings,
mm-hmm.
right? So looking inside the windows of the home, he discovers that the caller is actually still in bed and still on the phone with the 911 dispatcher, quote, clenching his hands over his stomach, dot, 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 which was very large.
I wrote it down, too, because I was like, which was very large. That's just...
And I was just like, oh, sweet angel baby.
Oh, he didn't know what else to say.
Pumpkin. Oh, okay. So if you're listening, Sergeant Truitt, just if you're listening by chance, think before you speak, yeah. My dear.
Which was very large.
Yeah.
Other descriptive words.
Yeah, yeah. There are things that we say, and then there are things that we don't say.
There are things that we don't.
And then there are things that we definitely don't say on camera.
Uh-huh. National television.
National television. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yep.
I think hopefully sweet angel baby pumpkin, lamb, deer, you're picking up what I'm putting down.
I was hoping that was something you would bring up.
Yeah. The officers discover the victim still inside the home, bleeding. And then suddenly a woman dressed in night clothes comes running up to them. From a separate part of the house. The man in distress is identified as an Austin media mogul and millionaire named Stephen Beard, and the woman is his wife, Celeste. Celeste, along with her teenage daughter, informed the authorities that they were asleep on the other side of the large home when they were actually awoken by the sirens and lights outside of the house. When informed that Stephen was bleeding from an apparent injury to his stomach, Celeste reportedly began screaming and pleading, "Don't let him die. Please don't let him die."
Like, why is that exactly what you're screaming?
Why is that where your brain went immediately? So mm-hmm. I have, in very me fashion, put maybe just a small pin in that. Just a small pin.
I had written just a few notes of, like, things I found points of interest,
yeah.
Which, you know, one of them being the very large comment, and the other one right after that being, quote, "Don't let him die. I already have questions."
Exactly. Exactly.
I already have questions.
Well, and maybe that was done intentionally by the producers of the episode. I can only hope.
Yeah.
But if not, everybody, put a pin in that.
Sure. And it could be like, yeah, that wasn't the only thing she said, but it was what they mentioned.
It was the thing that stood out.
Yeah, for maybe. Sure. Because it does stand out.
Most definitely, to say the least.
Yeah.
Next, we get some background on Stephen Beard. The audience learns that in 1999... he was a 75-year-old millionaire, but had not always lived a lavish lifestyle. Stephen was raised in Dallas-Fort Worth by a humble family that instilled in him the value of hard work. As an adult, Stephen got into advertising, which led him to creating a local television station in Austin, Texas. His station soon became one of the top TV, or one of the top stations in all of the Austin area, and ultimately Steve sold the business, thus making himself a multi-millionaire.
I remember I laughed because the one woman said a multi-millionaire, and then said that he made like $54 million, and I'm like, I mean, that's a lot of money, but it definitely doesn't qualify as a multi-millionaire.
Yeah, she was very emphatic about
that.
She was. And I think I had the same reaction. I was like, I might have knocked off a couple of multis if it were me.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. So I appreciate you for just using the one. Good job.
Yeah,
because that's accurate. You're telling the story.
I'm telling the story the way that it deserves to be told. Despite his professional and financial successes, life for Stephen had not been without hardships and heartache.
Sure, headaches in there,
headaches
too.
Headaches as well, I'm sure,
I mean, if you're
yeah.
working all that much.
Exactly. By 1993, he had lost his first wife and the mother of his children to cancer, which left Steve heartbroken. In order to cope with the loss, Stephen turned to his kids and his friends for comfort. One such friend was a woman by the name of Celeste Martinez. Let's sigh. All right. Stephen Beard was a member of the Austin Country Club. Because of course he was.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I even said that. I said the same thing.
He would often go there for dinner and social interaction during his wife's illness and even after her death. Celeste Martinez, a young, bubbly, beautiful blonde, was a waitress at said country club because of course she was.
Mm-hmm.
And according to those who knew them, the two easily became friends because of their shared fun, funny personalities. Soon they were dating, and to some people surprised, soon after that, they were married, a ceremony which was held at the very country club in which the couple had met, because Of course they would.
Because duh.
Because of course they
would. Where else would they have gotten married when they met there, you know?
I mean, they obviously have the money to do so.
And if I were her, I would be getting married there, and I'd be just looking at everyone that was serving me, like, moving on up, bitches. See you later.
At least all the people that had been, like, bitches to you.
Mean to her. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, sure. I guess that's what I was alluding to, you know?
Yeah.
If you've worked in the restaurant industry, you know that you're not friends with everyone you work with. Yeah. It's not possible.
Though many question the true intentions behind a woman in her early 30s marrying a millionaire widower approximately 40 years her senior, the couple didn't care what other people thought and were seemingly very much in love. Steve was so happy with Celeste and so willing to make her a part of his family that he even adopted her teenage twin daughters. And to house his new family, Stephen built a, quote, magnificent new mansion in Westlake Hills. A home that our good friend, sweet baby lamb chop, Sergeant Truitt describes as opulent, safe, and, quote, just like a fairy book setting.
I love that.
End quote. A fairy book setting.
A fairy book.
Mm-hmm.
A fairy book. What?
Bless his sweetheart. I just want to protect him, you know,
uh-huh.
from the microphones and the cameras that catch him saying and doing silly things.
Yeah, he was not meant for television.
I just want to wrap him in my arms and protect him.
Yep. Poor guy.
Yeah, this poor guy. They go on to tell us that Steve doted over Celeste and their daughters and that she was living a Cinderella story life until the, of course, dramatic cinematography changes and the ominous music kicks up in the background, and it takes us right back to the night that Celeste happily ever after turned into a nightmare.
Cue the music.
Dun, dun, dun. Now we cut to the medical crew, or the ambulance crew, showing up, and of course, me suddenly yelling at the television. The fastest way, I'm going on record right now by saying the fastest way to get me yelling at a TV is to put some dumb EMS workers on the screen.
Ugh, I know.
Also, I want to preface with the fact that I have an almost 20-year career as an EMS worker. I speak from a lot of firsthand experience and knowledge regarding the things that I'm about to say. Don't want to offend anybody. I have the right to say some of these things because I have literally been in these situations dozens, if not hundreds of times.
Give us the tea.
Up to this point, the first responders involved in the situation are under the impression that some sort of like random medical emergency has occurred, that a violent act has actually not taken place, and therefore there is no foul play. They believe that first and foremost because that's how the incident was dispatched. The 911 dispatcher received a call from Steven, who reported that he'd quite literally woken up to blood and guts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He didn't say to them that he had been stabbed. He didn't say to them that he'd been shot. He didn't say that he'd been maimed. Nothing like that. He literally just said, I woke up and my guts are spilling out. Second, I wanted to give our dear, sweet angel baby friend, I wanted to give him another, oh, bless his heart, but Sergeant Truitt actually makes a really plausible point here. He said that Steven had a breathing machine from what I could tell, a breathing machine was just his CPAP machine that was beside his bed. And because of that, because he saw breathing tubes and whatnot, he assumed, as someone who's not a trained healthcare provider, he assumed that Steven was maybe in recovery from some sort of like abdominal surgery.
Mm-hmm.
He assumed that maybe he had stitches and they might have bursts while he slept, which... Actually, I was... It's very valid.
Yeah,
like, totally. I was very impressed with that thought process.
Especially with how it was dispatched.
Exactly. So, that all tracks for me. I have no shade to throw in his direction. I'll even take back one of his bless his hearts.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's a good... You're so sweet.
To get him slightly out of the negative.
Totally.
All right, so where I...
Some redemption there.
Some redemption. Just a slight bit of redemption.
A little bit.
Where I do start to get pissed... is when we find out that the medical crew doesn't realize that Steven has in fact been shot through the stomach until after they are transferring him from his bed onto the ambulance stretcher and the bullet casing falls out of the bedding.
Yeah, that's real upsetting, isn't it?
Oh, it is no good.
Mm-hmm.
By all accounts, this man was awake and talking and able to inform these trained healthcare workers, had not had a recent surgery, therefore there were no stitches that may have burst open.
Yeah, there's no reason for this to have happened.
Exactly, so they clearly didn't ask him, first and foremost. Not only that, they clearly did not perform a physical examination of this man before they moved him.
Yeah, they just went in there and, like, grabbed him.
Because had they done so, they would have already had this information, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, and finally, you don't move a patient whose guts are literally spilling out with some index of suspicion as to what caused that.
That's what I'm saying. Why didn't you check the sitch out a little bit more? Yeah.
These are bad, bad EMS workers, bad healthcare providers. Their job clearly was not done in the most appropriate way.
I mean, I'm glad you brought it up and said it, and you're the one talking about it, because you definitely are allowed to say all of that.
Absolutely. No, there were things that they should have done that they clearly did not do. There were, at the very least, things that they should have done in a certain order.
Absolutely.
As a precaution to that patient and not potentially making any of his injuries any worse. And they just didn't do it.
Yeah.
So
a lot of neglect going
on. What I'm saying is these EMS workers, though we are shouting them out and understand that they do a hard job, they need to do that job better.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So I'll step off of that soapbox now.
I appreciate you so much.
The take home from my ranting about this section is, of course, the EMS workers need to do better. And at that point, everyone there realizes that Steven has been shot, so the crime scene officially becomes a crime scene.
Yeah, and you just moved the body, so.
Steven Beard is, of course, rushed to the hospital, and police begin their investigation. When questioned, Celeste explains that due to her husband's sleeping with a breathing machine or sleeping with a CPAP machine, she actually slept in her own bedroom, which is in a different wing of the house, so that so she wouldn't have actually been able to hear a shotgun blast. Which, again, not super unusual. I know people who are very happy and healthy and in love and in good, like, strong, solid marriages who don't necessarily sleep in the same bed because one of the two of them sleeps in a CPAP machine. Not only is it kind of big and cumbersome, from what I understand, it's kind of noisy. So it might keep the spouse who doesn't require CPAP to sleep safely. It might keep them awake.
I definitely, during that explanation, was like, okay, yeah, I buy it.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It's all tracking so far. In their search of the property, police noted that the door to the home appeared to have been left unlocked. And despite there being expensive jewelry, artwork, clothing, etc., all throughout the home, there was no sign of theft or burglary. Law enforcement began to believe that someone had entered the home with the sole intention of harming Steven. However, after extensive questioning of witnesses, as well as the victim himself, investigators had no leads as to who might want to target him. That is until a family friend came forward with a name. The name of a woman who was actually a known acquaintance of Celeste, a woman by the name of Tracy Tarleton. I need just a tiny little break.
All right, perfect.
We are back again.
Yes, we are.
I'm so jealous of the fact that you have the ability to do that.
Well, you did tell me off script that I had to, like, incorporate it more often, so.
Well, that's because I think other people will be jealous of the fact that you have the ability to do
that. I'll do it for you and all the folks, so.
Thank you. See, she gave us a twofer.
I did.
Ask and ye shall receive with Ashley.
Right. That's exactly right.
Or at least that's what Sierra says. Mm-hmm. Okay, I needed a quick break, but I think that was a perfect place to take a break because we really start to dive into, like, a whole separate side of the story now.
I got some sugar, you got some caffeine.
Yep.
We're amped and ready to go.
We are working, folks. I'm sure that you are all aware of this, unless you're new to the podcast. And if you are, hi, welcome.
Welcome.
But this is our side gig. We are both very busy people, but we are here twice this week.
That's right.
For you folks. So
what a pleasure it is for me, though.
But no, this really is. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. And I say that just to explain why we needed a break for sugar and caffeine.
That's exactly right. Yes.
Okay, getting back to the story. When following up on the aforementioned lead with Celeste's daughters, officers learned that there was no real love lost between Stephen and Tracy. In fact, Stephen did not approve of his wife's relationship with her because he was perceptive about the fact that he believed he knew what Tracy was after. He believed that she was, in fact, after Celeste. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, all the folks connect the dots, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, everybody understands why this particular case made it to the Slate Queens podcast.
There's the moment.
There it is. Here is where we get a little bit more information about Tracy Tarleton's life. In 1999, she was 59 years old. But then later, they said she was 42 years old. Did you notice that?
I was just going to say, wait a minute.
Yeah. Originally, they said she was 59 years old because I remember thinking, This poor woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I didn't even realize it said 59, and I watched it twice, but, like, I was just thinking, I looked at you like, wait, what?
Yeah. Well, no, not this poor woman. I guess my thought process was, like, the opposite in the fact that I was like, she looks really great for 59.
That's what I'm saying. Like, good for her. Who are you, Kris Jenner? Like, what's happening?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But later, they said she was 42. I didn't do any research because I was not the research queen this week. As to
maybe
like
she
what
was
her actual
at the time of like researching this episode and
maybe
they screwed up by doing that
maybe
but, yeah, in any case,
yeah,
she was definitely not 59.
No, she was not 59. So let's go with 42.
Yeah, definitely. Right. Fits. She looks younger than that even, but yeah, that definitely fits way better. Okay,
yeah, exactly. So in 1999, we're gonna say that she was 42 years old and she was living and working in Austin, Texas. We learned that Tracy suffered from bipolar disorder, for which she would occasionally attempt to self-medicate with drugs and alcohol. Several months before the shooting, Tracy was struggling with her behavioral health and had become suicidal, so she sought inpatient treatment at a mental health facility. It was there that she met Celeste, who had a history of depression and was also receiving inpatient behavioral health. The two women reportedly had similar senses of humor and quickly developed a friendship which extended beyond their respective hospital stays.
Okay, so I just want to say this real quick because it's one point of contention that I forgot to actually write down that I meant to. Part of like the defense was Tracy claims that they arrived on the same day, mm-hmm. and Celeste, she's claiming that she was there like 3 days before or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, and there's documentation, obviously, of when someone was taken in. But I just wanted to throw that out there because I forgot and I didn't include it in mine.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's a huge, like, red flag, I guess, in their case.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. We'll find out why later.
Yeah.
Not too much later, but later.
Not too much later.
Like, soon-ish.
We're getting there.
We're getting there. All right. The relationship between Celeste and Tracy was believed to be a special type of friendship due to the amount of time they began to I see that side eye that you're giving me.
That guy just, like, it was a special friendship. I'm like, oh my God, did they bump uglies? Is that what you mean?
And I should have touched on this, and I meant to go back in my notes, and I've been really busy this week, so I just didn't have the opportunity to do so. There were so many different, like, talking heads in this one.
Yes, there really were.
I normally make it a point to introduce everybody and, like, say everybody's name and, like, what role they played. There were just so many that I couldn't do that. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a great episode. I really enjoyed it. But we just spoke to so many different people. We spoke to this person's defense attorney and this person's defense attorney and this person's prosecuting attorney and this person's prosecuting attorney. There were just so many.
Definitely well-researched.
Well-researched. I just felt like if I were throwing all of these names out at you folks, that it would get really confusing.
Yeah. And there's really, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that particular gentleman was like, it was a real special type of friendship. I'm like, oh, is that what we're calling it, Queen?
Yes,
Is that what we're calling it?
Is that what it is? Okay.
But according to that person, it was a special type of friendship due to the amount of time that they had been spending together. And of course, also speaking on the phone. Because of that, Steve had decided that he actually wanted to meet Tracy. So in August of 1999, she was invited to the Beard home for dinner. Steven was cordial and welcoming. He even cooked the meal that they all enjoyed that evening. However, after dinner, that all changed. It was after dinner that the ladies were sitting on the back patio enjoying some wine when Celeste's daughter actually spotted the two women kissing. So, special type of friendship.
She's a little snitch, too. I don't blame her.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, initially I was like, whoa, okay. I might have just gone to my room and
getting all up in your mom's business,
played Atari
right?
or yeah. something. I mean, what were the kids doing in
1999?
We should know. I was
partying
literally
like it's 1999.
I was literally in high school, so I should know. Actually, you know what? I know exactly what she could have been doing. AOL Instant Messenger.
Oh, absolutely. Creating away messages. Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Very passive aggressively.
1,000% could have, like, gone into her room because they were rich. You know, she had a computer. You know, they had dial up.
Absolutely.
She could have gone into her room and she could have told some like random stranger in an AOL chat room that she caught her mom kissing another woman. But instead, she ran to her stepfather and was like, hey, what's
Something's
up?
Something's going on. Yeah.
There's some stuff going down. She told Steven what she had seen, and he reportedly calmly and without any sort of violence towards Tracy just told her that she needed to leave. She did that And later that night, though, she was arrested for a DWI. So it's probably all that wine she was drinking.
That's what I'm saying. It was like, you know, they mentioned that she was, you know, she had been drinking, and it could have been that she, you know, tried to kiss Celeste for the argument's sake, right?
Yeah.
The devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she got a DWI, so that kind of backs her story up if she's, you know.
Yep. And there are two sides to every story. Exactly. And just because you happen upon a situation in, like, a moment, you don't know what happened leading up to that moment.
Yeah, so, and it could be, too, like, maybe she wasn't drunk at Celeste's house. Maybe she went and got drunk later because she was like, oh, no, I'm never going to see her again, and I'm sad. Whatever, you know? So who knows?
So
who
we don't,
knows?
Who knows? We don't really know what happened that night, but we do know some facts about what happened later.
Yes.
Because of this information, because they found out that Stephen didn't care for Tracy because of this incident with her kissing his wife and his asking her to leave, now they suspect that a love triangle may have been the reason that Stephen ended up shot. They suspect that Tracy may have tried to eliminate the things she perceived to be standing in the way of her being with Celeste. And of course, in her mind, that would be Stephen Beard himself.
Clearly.
Yeah. Police locate Tracy Tarleton's home in South Austin and go there to ask her some questions. When they arrive, she is found, quote, surrounded by candles and photos of Celeste, obsessed with Celeste, end quote.
So I'm not going to lie. I was like kind of cooking dinner when we first watched this, and I was in the kitchen, which is connected to the living room, and I was like, I turned around and I looked at Sierra and I was like, did they just say she had a fucking shrine? Is that what I heard? And she was like, basically, yeah.
Okay, so did you actually look at it, though?
I did, though, the second time. I was like, okay, well, it's basically just like a normal room with, like, picture frames and candles.
Legit. Legit. So I I have this whole rant in my notes that literally says essentially what you just said. The description gives us a really good, like, mental image or mental picture of, like, the traditional, like, stalker shrine, right?
Exactly.
Based on that description, you're expecting to look at, like, witchcraft. Like, that's what you're expecting, right? No, it was literally a nicely decorated home with three fragrance candles.
That's like, right. She's got some soy candles or some three wicks.
And exactly.
Then a couple picture frames and with a couple pictures of them.
And a couple of picture
frames.
That's
what our living room looks like right fucking now.
And, I mean, they're making it seem like it was this obsessive type thing.
Very,
I mean,
like, if you ever watch The L Word, like, when Alice has the shrine to Laura. Like, she even has a goddamn cardboard cutout. Like, and I totally was envisioning that's what was happening on the screen, and I'm glad that I went back and watched again and actually saw it, because I was like, well, that's aggressive. That's an aggressive description of that room.
Very aggressive description of that room. And just because you have, it was literally, I think I counted a total of three.
Agreed.
Photos of, like, she and this person who arguably was her best friend at the time.
Yeah, and there were also, like, and I do agree with you on the three thing, because I remember there are, like, three pictures that they actually do, like, flash quite often.
Yeah.
During this whole show, so.
Yeah. I don't think it was obsessive, at least not that particular aspect of the story. I don't think it was obsessive. I just think it's a gay thing. Right?
We do like to have pictures of ourselves.
We're here, we're queer, we like scented candles and picture frames.
That's very true.
Get used to it.
There's literally one right there and then two pictures of us, see?
Yeah.
Gay.
Yep. Gay.
Anyways.
Oh, okay. The really important part of the story here, though, is the fact that as soon as she's questioned about it, Tracy admits to shooting Stephen.
She does. She folds.
She completely folds. She turns in the shotgun that she used to do it, and she is immediately taken into custody. She's a no-nonsense kind of gal. She's like, yeah, I did it.
I mean, what am I going to do at this point, I suppose, right?
Exactly. And here's the gun if you want it.
At least she wasn't insulting to the officers, like, thinking she could get away with it, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to think that that's the sort of criminal that I would be. Or I would be the extreme opposite. I wouldn't just, like, lie. I would, A, like, get the fuck out of Dodge. Yep. You know, like, I would try to run.
Recreate yourself.
Completely
be like the
recreate
killer.
Myself. Yeah. Or if they found me because I decided that it just wasn't worth running, or, like, I had an attack of conscience, or, you know, something crazy like that, I'd like to be like, yeah, you got me, sis.
I don't think I'd be able to run because, like, I mean, I'm an anxious person already. Imagine trying to sleep at night knowing you're, like, literally being chased down by the FBI or something.
That's a really good point.
I couldn't do it. I would die because of exhaustion.
That's a really good point. So does that bring us to, like, a life rule or...
Oh, what did we decide we were going to call it?
Oh, Queen's Law.
Queen's Law.
Yeah.
We've decided it's just happening. And we said if it happens again,
yeah,
we're going to have a name for
it. We're going to make it a thing because it's been happening so organically and just kind of on its own. It's not something we're trying to do.
Yeah.
But we're finding them in these stories.
And it was, we literally just had this moment. Yeah. Like there's a twinkle in both of our eyes.
So we're going to call that Queen's Law. Yeah. And this is at least, let's call this Queen's Law number 3 because I can't remember.
We still can't remember the
beyond
very first
that.
One.
I can't remember the very first one. But so this would be just don't run from the police, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not worth it.
No.
You're literally going to spend the remainder of your life like looking over your shoulder.
And they're going to go anxious easier on paranoid. You if you turn yourself in.
Yeah,
I mean,
for
sure.
We've
seen that before, right?
And even if you weren't completely in the wrong, like in the crime that you committed, maybe you did something out of like self-defense.
Yeah.
If you run, nobody's going to believe you because you've made yourself a non-credible source at that point.
Hello, OJ Simpson. Yeah. Sorry.
Don't OJ it. Don't OJ it.
Don't be an OJ.
Don't be an OJ. Queen's Law. I like that better. Don't be an OJ.
That's perfect. Okay, we got it.
I do love that. When told that it was her friend who attacked her husband, Celeste was reportedly devastated and didn't want to believe that it was possible. That is, until they tested the ballistics of the shotgun shell, which had been collected from Stephen's bedroom, and found that it was a match to Tracy's gun. Also, I'm curious if you experienced the same thing that I experienced in that moment.
Mm.
The little ballistics expert guy that popped up on the screen.
What was it?
I was like, hey, fam.
Oh, yeah.
Way to represent
sis. Yeah, for sure. I think I even said something to Sierra like, oh, yeah, fam.
Yeah.
Family.
Family alert. Whoop, whoop.
Love that for us.
Yeah, love that for us. Great representation.
Yeah, way to rep it.
I like it. Sadly, we soon find out that while authorities are building their case against Tracy, Stephen, who had remained hospitalized for his injuries for approximately 2 months' time.
I totally missed that it was that long.
Yeah, it was 2 months.
Holy crap. I mean, I guess that makes sense because you're going to probably explain why that makes sense.
Ish, yeah. So while the police or authorities are trying to build a case against Tracy, Stephen is still in the hospital. It's approximately 2 months after he's been shot. On January 22nd of 2000, he dies from a pulmonary embolism or a blood clot in his lung, for those of you who are unfamiliar, which was actually a complication from the injuries he sustained from the shooting. He just sustained multiple injuries from being shot like through the abdomen, and he was just in the process of trying to recover from those. I imagine he had multiple surgeries, which makes you susceptible to things like pulmonary emboli.
Yes, I've been watching enough trauma TV shows that like that's exactly what my like whole school of thought was, and you just validated me so hard and I loved it.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the validation.
Because the PE for the healthcare folks, because the pulmonary embolism or the PE was actually what caused Stephen's death, but the PE itself was caused by the gunshot wound.
Mm-hmm.
The gunshot was ruled his official cause of death.
Yes.
And the pending charges against Tracy were upgraded from an aggravated assault charge to like a felony murder
mm-hmm.
or a capital murder.
Capital murder.
Yeah. And also she was charged with an injury to an elderly individual.
I noticed that too.
Which gave me pause because if I'm being very honest, I didn't know that that was a thing.
I'm kind of glad that it is.
But I'm here for it. Yeah, I'm here for it. F anybody who would go around purposefully harming elderly people.
Because they could take advantage of.
Absolutely. They
like,
absolutely
harming,
do.
And that could mean like not just physical harm too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Injury to an elderly individual and capital murder charge.
Yeah.
Police knew who had murdered Stephen Beard and they knew how. But the question began to form why.
Yeah.
Right? Why? What was her motivation?
Why did this happen?
Yeah. Was Stephen simply the victim of Tracy's obsession with his wife Celeste? Or please humor me here. Let's all pretend that I'm doing my absolute best like Moira Rose impression, right?
I love this. Please do it.
Was there a more sinister explanation?
That was really good.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's actually my favorite Moira line of the entire series. Perhaps there's a more sinister explanation.
Yep.
So investigators kept coming back to the fact that on the night that Stephen was shot, the door to the home had been left unlocked, the mansion's alarm system had not been activated, et cetera, indicating that Tracy may have had help entering and exiting undetected. help they suspected came from Celeste. However, when asked, Tracy adamantly denied that Celeste had any involvement or gave her any encouragement to attack Stephen.
Yep.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, sure. Sure, Jan.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Over the weeks that followed, Celeste began behaving in ways that were alarming to the investigators, as well as people who had been close to she and Stephen. Celeste was, quote, living an extremely extravagant, lavish, single lifestyle, celebrating life and burning through her husband's millions at an alarming rate.
Yeah.
Based on these unusual behaviors, police began to look into Celeste's past. In doing so, they discovered that she had been married multiple times, that she had a history of infidelity, and she was on probation for a criminal fraud charge at the time that Celeste and Stephen had met and gotten married.
I also want to point out to you, because I wrote this down, in 6 months, she spent $500,000, to which I wrote, wow, 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 wow. Like, yeah. That. And then one friend had, like, reportedly said, like, they asked how much she had, like, what was the most you spent in one day? And she said $50,000.
Yeah.
I was, like, trying to think of what I would spend my money on other than a car.
Well, that was even different money. That was like money that he had set up as a trust fund to her when they had first married.
That's right.
So this is...
She was already spending too much money.
Yeah, this is full inheritance. And I'm going to touch on that a little bit more later. This is full inheritance. So imagine how much money she's spending now.
Valid.
When she has more than $500,000.
Yeah, when she's not on a limit because she's been spending too much.
Exactly. So they found out that she had cheated on her husband. They found out that she had a criminal record, et cetera, et cetera. All findings that made authorities wonder if there was a more sinister connection between Tracy and Celeste. And I fully did not add that second sinister myself. It was legitimately part of the actual show.
They really did.
Yeah, they really did say that word
at some point. Yeah. I was like, what a good word to use.
Yeah, and I had already like put in my notes the initial like That's sinister.
Amazing.
And I was like, this is serendipitous. I'm not taking either of them out. They both make the cut.
As the Geico Gecko says, serendipity.
Serendipity.
You do it so much better.
I don't know about that. I think that the impressions sound way better in my head than they actually do.
Yes, very much me too. Very much me too.
Authorities knew that there was no way that they could prove a case against Celeste without Tracy's testimony. Quite literally, all evidence of the actual crime pointed to Tracy, and she had already confessed to the crime.
Yeah.
They knew that they had no case against Celeste unless Tracy
said something.
Yeah. Exactly. In this segment, we learned from investigators that from the very beginning of being questioned about the incident, Tracy had, quote, been hinting that she had a story to tell and that her lawyers wanted immunity, complete immunity for her story or for her testimony. The district attorney's office, however, was not willing to negotiate complete immunity with no punishment for the crime. And kudos to them.
Yeah, there's no reason why you should.
Yeah, I think I would have been appalled if they had done so. With both sides unwilling to reach a plea agreement, Tracy continues to deny that Celeste was involved in Stephen's murder at all. All right? Mm-hmm. And please pretend, again, like, again, pretend with me that I'm doing in this in my very best dramatic voice actor persona. But would she change her tune when Celeste meets a new man?
You did it just like they did. That was very good.
I love that you're humoring me.
I know. You know what? I'm here for it.
All right.
I'm entertained by it.
Entertained.
I am.
In July of 2000, that's less than 6 months after the death of her fourth husband.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. When you say it like that.
When you put it in those words, yeah. Celeste Beard married a man by the name of Cole Johnson. Mm-hmm. Just a few months earlier, when Celeste had been out, you know, celebrating life and whatnot, she met Cole while he was working as a local bartender. And I don't mean that to come across as shade in any way, shape, or form to bartenders, because service industry is hard as fuck. My mother was a bartender when I was growing up. She made amazing money.
Oh, absolutely.
And she worked her tookus. She worked her tookus off. So that is not shady in any way, shape, or form. That's literally just the information we got from the episode. She met him while she was out partying whilst he was working as a bartender.
Which is pretty on par for her.
Yeah, exactly. So some people felt that given her history, it wasn't a surprise that Celeste had remarried so quickly. Surprising or not, though, would prove to be her downfall. Because when Tracy learned of the marriage, realizing that she had been used by Celeste, she decided to come forward with the truth about the part that Celeste played in the murder of Stephen Beard.
And, I mean, it's not surprising necessarily, but I really did out loud say, well, that's all it took. And I'm not surprised by that. Like, I'm not.
No, not at all.
This woman was obviously very much in love with her, despite any type of, like, mental health disorder or whatever. Like, Tracy, of course, she's going to see that she's just all of a sudden moved on. She's going to be like, wow, everything that we had, whether it was real or not, is a facade.
Yeah, I was played for a fool.
Exactly.
She played me for a fool.
Didn't someone actually say that in the episode?
I think so.
Like, she realized that she had been played for a fool.
I think so.
Yeah.
Actually.
That's very...
I watched it twice, so I probably did pick up on that.
It's a very accurate way to describe it, though.
Oh, it for sure is. Tracy realizes this, and she comes forward. She explains to the detectives that in the beginning of Celeste's marriage to Stephen, money actually hadn't been a problem for her. And this is what you kind of touched on earlier. Mm-hmm. The reason being is because Stephen had set up a trust fund for his wife in which she had full access to $500,000 of her air quotes own money. And I hated the fact that they described it as her own money. It wasn't her money. It was his money.
Yeah.
And as you said before, Ashley, what happened to that money?
It was gone.
She spent it.
6 months.
In 6 months' time, she blew through $500,000, reportedly buying high-end fashion, handbags, and jewelry, reportedly even bragged to a friend that she had spent as much as $50,000 in one day.
I just can't.
On clothes.
Like, I can't.
And jewelry.
I mean, $500,000, like, she's spending it like she's got millions, right? It's like she doesn't understand. I hate myself that I'm about to say this, but she doesn't understand the value of a dollar.
I mean, as someone who works hard
yeah.
for their money, yeah. you are allowed to use that phrase.
It's such like a 1970s, like my dad would say that or something, but you know what I mean? Like,
it's such totally. A Midwest thing to say.
Yeah, you don't understand the value of a dollar. Blue collar Ohio. It's true, yeah. though. Like, that's all it screams to me. You don't get it because you've never wanted for anything because you just marry men that, like, have money, I guess. You know?
I guess. All right, so reacting to the fact that, his new wife had spent $500,000.
A fuck ton of money.
In 6 months. Reacting very much, I believe, in the same way that I think most people would in that situation. Stephen approaches Celeste about this situation. He's angry. He's frustrated because she squandered this money, et cetera, et cetera. He knows the value of a dollar.
He does.
He's worked very hard for this money, and he's angry about the fact that she is seemingly squandering it. They're unable to resolve this disagreement. What does he do? He begins divorce proceedings. And in response to that, Celeste reportedly becomes suicidal and sought treatment at a behavioral health facility. And if that sounds familiar to anybody,
ding, 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 ding.
There's a darn good reason, because it was during that inpatient stay that Celeste met who?
One Miss Tracy Tarleton.
One Miss Tracy Tarleton. You are correct. See how this timeline is now just kind of...
I love that we just came full circle right there.
Nicely falling together.
Mm-hmm. They did a very good job at that.
They did a fantastic job. This is a really, really well done show.
I really enjoyed it. I'll definitely be watching plenty more episodes for sure.
According to Tracy, she and Celeste developed a close, affectionate friendship quickly, even kissing early into their knowing one another. Celeste confided in Tracy that she was unhappy in her marriage and particularly unhappy about the fact that she, quote, occasionally had to engage in sexual activity with Stephen, which I thought was kind of odd terminology, the occasionally had to engage.
Mm-hmm.
But then right after that, we learned that there's evidence that Celeste had actually been drugging her husband's food with sleeping pills so that he'd pass out and she didn't have to deal with him, aka didn't have to share a bed with him.
Yeah, and that he was a vodka drinker, and mm-hmm. she would pour out his vodka and replace it with Everclear.
And to which I have to pose the question, like,
how do you not taste it?
How do you not taste the difference? If you're a vodka drinker, how do you not know the difference between vodka and Everclear?
So maybe it could be this, like, it's a bartender's trick, and it's not that you would get someone more drunk. Typically, it's less drunk, but it could be that, like, maybe she's got two different stashes. Maybe she starts him out with his, you know, his Sky vodka. I don't know why that's what came to mind, but he starts with that. And then after he's had maybe one or two drinks, you don't really notice the taste of things so much. Yeah. If you're mixing it with something, you know, maybe it's just...
Well, and they were... I just considered this while you were making your excellent points. they had money,
yeah.
So maybe they could afford the more high-end versions of these things that didn't have, like, quite so specific taste. Because if you pay more for, like, vodkas and things like that, you taste them less.
It tastes way more like you can't taste it.
Yeah. So that's something I didn't consider. I'm a vodka drinker, so I was like, somebody puts Everclear in my cocktail, I would spit that shit out.
Absolutely. That, and like, even my point, like, even I don't care how drunk I was, like, I would know that's definitely a flavor that you can taste. But you're right, you have a good point. Yeah. See, we did that together. We're so good at that. Love that.
We're just so good. And if you agree that we're just so good, everybody rate and review us 5 stars on it.
Love that.
I suppose the on occasion when she did have to share a bed with her husband were the nights that she couldn't incapacitate this poor guy. Also, Tracy tells us that on the nights that she drugged her husband, Celeste would sneak out of the house to spend more time with her. And that after a period of time, their relationship became sexual. And after a period of time after that, their relationship turned into love. Or so Tracy thought. Yeah. This poor woman.
It's a whirlwind.
I'm not upholding her in any of the bad decisions or mistakes that she made, but I do definitely believe that she was taken advantage of for the reasons that I will explain now. Mm-hmm. Then the manipulation really begins. According to the investigators, after establishing that relationship with Tracy, Celeste begins to use love and sex to get what she wanted from her, all while convincing her that Celeste was being treated horribly by Stephen. They began planning Stephen's death. Tracy, motivated by love, and Celeste, motivated by the fact that Stephen was divorcing her, because remember, we spoke about it earlier, he had actually started divorce proceedings because of her squandering his wealth and being unappreciative of all that he had given to her, etc., etc. And if he was divorcing her, she was going to get nothing because there was an existence of a prenuptial agreement. An agreement that took away all of Celeste's rights to any of Stephen's money. Unless, of course, his death occurred while the two were still husband and wife.
Good for him for the prenup, at least.
Yeah, good for him for that. His lawyers, I imagine, insisted on
it.
Yeah, definitely. They're like, hey, it's all fine and well and good that you're marrying this beautiful, blonde
waitress
who's 40 years younger than you are. And again, not talking any sort of...
No, that's
shade
totally fine.
About people in the service industry, because literally the hardest jobs you can have. Mm-hmm. And these people oftentimes make really good money if, you know, people aren't douchebags.
That's
and don't,
exactly right.
Yeah. And, yep. And don't
people like, appreciate.
Exactly. And appreciate the service that they're providing. Not talking any sort of trash about that, but.
It's definitely a different world.
Yeah, it's a different world. And I imagine in the corporate world, this man was a multimillionaire. Not multi, like the lady said. He was a multimillionaire. So I imagine he had lawyers that were like, hey, Stephen, we really kind of insist that this is something that you want to do.
Yeah, you should cover your butt. Everybody always should anyway.
Yeah, so if he divorced her, she was going to get nothing. And she didn't even have that trust anymore because she had spent all that money.
She's probably kicking herself now.
Kicking herself now. Tracy further told detectives that once she agreed to kill Stephen, Celeste had promised to clear her path, making certain that the alarm system was not activated that night and that the doors were unlocked so that Tracy could easily get in and get out of the house undetected. And of course, as we pretty much already know, that's exactly how the crime went down. Mm-hmm. Tracy snuck into the home with a 22-gauge shotgun, the caliber of choice for most murderers, it would seem. Because we see that a lot.
Yeah.
She shot Stephen in the stomach or the abdomen. Same thing.
Yeah.
And she snuck out before the poor guy even knew what had happened to him.
That's just crazy.
Quite literally got in and out.
Bang, bang,
before
boom.
He even knew what had happened.
And then he wakes up.
Yeah.
I can't imagine waking up like guts spilling out, basically.
And hopefully you'll never have to know.
Yeah, right? That's just wild. I would never even heard that before.
Crazy.
In any case we've covered, right?
Yeah. With this new information and Tracy agreeing to testify against Celeste in a court of law, The prosecution was able to obtain an indictment for a capital murder charge. A charge that, if found guilty, carries an automatic charge of life in prison, or an automatic sentence of life in prison. Celeste Beard's trial began in March of 2003. Here we get to see actual trial footage of the prosecuting attorney telling the court that they intended to prove that Celeste Beard was, quote, greedy and manipulative, and that she ultimately took advantage of a mentally ill woman who was in love with her. We also have the displeasure of seeing actual footage of Celeste herself. And just like that, my snap was not good. There we go. Just like that, I'm screaming at my TV again. Uh-huh. Let me explain why. Her defense attorney obviously did some of that, like, Casey Anthony bullshit here.
Oh my God, so accurate.
You know what I'm talking about, right? I do. They did that whole, like, hey, Celeste, we need you to look as mild and meek and harmless as possible to the jury. Mm-hmm. So here's what you're going to have to do. First and foremost, you're going to have to stop cutting or coloring your hair. Wear it longer, but keep it out of your face so that everyone can see the grandma-style eyeglasses that we're going to make sure that you wear. Here, now you only dress in ugly cardigans and floral dresses.
Yeah, and your hair can be like a little bit styled, but not overly styled, because it can't look like you have enough money to get it done.
Exactly. Basically, they want people to assume that she looks like a stereotypical, like, librarian or couldn't elementary school teacher. Yeah, couldn't hurt a fly, mild, meek, most certainly can't be a lesbian, you know, like,
definitely
that sort of thing.
I also wanted a side note, when they were doing, like, the flashback dramatizations of the two of them in the inpatient facility, mm-hmm. it was very Orange is the New Black vibes. Very...
very Orange is the New Black. I agree with that completely. And they also, let's be real honest, they did Tracy Tarleton a huge disservice.
They
with
did
the
her
actor
dirty.
That they chose
Girl,
to portray her in
the
reenactment.
Time. I'm like, that poor, why would they do that to her?
Now
she
that,
helped them out.
Now that woman legitimately looked like she was 59.
She did. Yeah, she did.
But not the photos that we saw of Tracy at the time.
No, yeah. I did. I was thinking the exact same thing. Yeah. Very good point.
Yeah. But that's why I was screaming at my TV. This, like, Casey Anthony, yeah. like, pandering to stereotypes, like, bullshit.
But it clearly works sometimes, you know?
I mean, obviously. Where is Casey Anthony now?
Hello, Casey Anthony, right.
She's out working as a photographer and a private investigator from the last I read.
A private investigator?
Private investigator.
Oh, my God.
I mean, takes a criminal to know a criminal,
right? I mean, I guess maybe that's the mentality. It could be.
Yeah. Okay. Tracy Tarleton testified at Celeste's trial. Her testimony was said to have been highly believable and effective because she was open and honest about her involvement in the crime and was understanding of her own wrongdoing. Surprisingly, Tracy had two other witnesses to corroborate her testimony. Who were they? Celeste's twin daughters.
The daughters.
The daughters came mm-hmm. in clutch. They added credence to Tracy's claims of a romantic relationship between she and Celeste by testifying that one of the daughters had seen the two women kissing on more than one occasion, while the other daughter had actually caught them in bed together.
Yep, there it is.
Ding, ding, ding. The girls, along with the prosecution, explained that they had come forward because they sincerely loved Stephen. They thought of him as a father, and they were hurt that their mother had been involved in his death. The defense, however, claimed that the girls had turned on their mother in order to receive the bulk of Stephen's inheritance. Additionally, the defense would attempt to portray Stacy as someone who was mentally ill, delusional, predatory, and, quote, not worthy of belief. Which I was so offended by. I don't know why I was so offended by that statement, but I just was.
Because it's like, oh, because someone has some kind of, like, mental health issues, then you can't believe anything they say?
Well, and he's literally calling to question, like, her worth.
Yeah. Worth a belief.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I was offended by it for mm-hmm. her immediately. I was like, you know what? Phrasing.
I can agree with that.
Phrasing. Yeah. You can do better.
Yeah.
The defense attorney also claimed that Celeste had denied Tracy's advances, and in doing so, it left both her and her husband vulnerable to be victimized. After 3 days of deliberation, the jury found Celeste Beard guilty of capital murder charge of her husband, Stephen. As previously mentioned, that charge carries an automatic life in prison sentence. There is a possibility of parole, but we learned that it's not going to be for 20 plus years post-sentencing. And so what became of Tracy Tarleton? The plea deal that she made, or that they were finally able to agree upon in exchange for her testimony against Celeste, left her with a sentence of 20 years with a possibility of parole in 10. One thing that I particularly appreciated about this was the fact that the attorneys involved in making the plea deal, they made sure that the family of Stephen Beard was involved. And they even let us know that they were all agreeable to that because they appreciated the fact that she came forward and helped them solidify the possibility that Celeste was going to be held accountable for her role.
Yeah, exactly.
In Stephen's death.
There was more justice there.
Yeah, there was more justice there. And they even, after the trial, after Celeste was found guilty, they requested the opportunity to meet Tracy and thank her for what she had done.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah. And then the episode closes with the information that Celeste Beard will be eligible for parole in 2043 at the age of 80 years old, and that Tracy Tarleton was paroled from prison in August of 2013.
That's right. Yeah. She's out and about.
And that's it. That's the episode, which I thought was pretty amazing. And
it was wonderful.
I'm still blown away by the opportunity that we got to see it early, but you all can see it right now. All right, so we're going to take a quick break and come back and see if you have anything else for us, Ashley.
We've got some updates.
Ooh, we love an update queen. Mm-hmm. All right.
So are you ready for some updates?
I am ready for you to fulfill my fantasy as the research queen.
That's what I am here for.
Do it. Let's do it.
So there's some shit like that has happened since all of this went down. One of the least shocking things being that Celeste Beard Johnson still claims to be innocent. There is an entire, like, there are websites. There's mm-hmm. Facebook pages, of course. There's one pro-Celeste website that is CelesteBeardNeedsHelp.com. I mean, when you go to that website, like, all the links you can click on kind of, like, are disabled at this point. So I feel like there's quite a few that I did find that now are just, like, disabled. You know, like, nobody can go to them. But the Facebooks are live, and I got a lot of, I got two different excerpts that I kind of want to read about two very different things from Facebook, because there's a book about, it's called Celeste Beard Johnson Biography, and it's written by Nancy Hall, and she basically is defending her and kind of giving a voice to Celeste. All of it is written, basically, a lot of it is just excerpts of things that Celeste has said to her that she is now writing down in this book. And the whole Facebook about this book is basically just excerpts from the book. So some of them, you get a lot of information that is really, okay, I guess I want to ask you, like, do you want to hear a little bit about, like, Celeste's life or her daughter's and, like, after that? Or do you want to hear something about Tracy Tarleton and, like, stuff we didn't know about her before? What do you want to hear first?
Can I hear all of it?
I mean, yes, you can hear all of it. But
what do I want to hear first?
It's kind of like good news first or bad news first, but they're both like kind of bad news. So
Okay. So we ended with Tracy.
Yeah.
Let's just continue on with the subject of Tracy.
About Tracy. Yeah. Okay. So this comes from the Celeste Beard Johnson Biography Facebook page, and it says, an excerpt from Tracy Tarleton's testimony, which this is just something from before that we did not know because of the episode, but it's now out there due to this book, you know, mm-hmm. being out. So, in no particular order, and to my best recollection, it is the testimony of Tracy Tarleton. Tracy Tarleton pled guilty to the murder of Stephen Beard on April 1st, 2002. She understood her psychological assessment. The patient is bright, but manipulative, and has delusional misinterpretations of other people and has distorted thinking. She testifies that she was told in recovery that she needs to quit obsessing about me and focus on her own recovery. She confirmed telling her therapist that she wanted to kill Stephen Beard. A police report was introduced into evidence concerning Reginald Breaux. And it's spelled B-R-E-A-U-X. I'd assume that's how you pronounce that.
Yeah.
That's how I'm going to pronounce that. A stranger she picked up in a parking lot. The charge against Tracy was aggravated assault with a motor vehicle. The night of the incident, an altercation ensued. She tried to run Bro over with her car after the two were driving around drinking beer. Her testimony and account of details varied from the police report. Tarleton told of how she played Russian roulette for 5 days in a row. When she backed off playing the deadly game, she admitted to hearing voices telling her to kill herself. The voices told her she was quote, was being a chicken, and the voices grew louder at night. When discussing hallucinations, she admitted that once she was driving, a rabbit was running alongside her car. She spoke of times where she wanted to take a razor to her wrist, which is very graphic, but we, you know, we have a trigger warning for a reason at the beginning of all this. That's a lot of things we didn't know about her, like, mental health. I mean, they mentioned that she's suicidal, but it's one thing to say that someone was suicidal, maybe they had an incident, but this just is a recollection of, I mean, she was spiraling at this particular moment, it seems.
Can I just ask about the rabbit running alongside her car?
I was thinking the same thing. I tried so hard to, like, keep a straight face.
Is that an indication that she's delusional?
I think they say that, like, she has hallucinations because, you know, they talk about how she has bipolar disorder, which obviously you can deal with medication. But if you're someone who is going to then drink excessively and or not take your medication, then hallucinations are a thing that can 100% happen.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So it's not, I mean, I'm not surprised that that's a thing, but they just didn't mention anything of that.
Well, I mean, based on what, okay, so this is what I'm thinking. We knew that she suffered some issues with her behavioral health. Mm-hmm. We knew that she had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. We knew that she wasn't compliant, or it sounded like she wasn't compliant with, like, a prescription, like, medication regimen, like a treatment plan. Mm-hmm. And that she would do what a lot of people who are bipolar in that same situation do. They try to self-regulate or self-medicate with drugs and alcohol.
Basically.
And then she'd spiral.
Yep.
I will say, though, and I am not an expert on this, but I will say that often people who are bipolar aren't violent towards other people. Mm-hmm. They're self-destructive, but they're not violent towards other people. So I would be curious what the motivation is for that.
Well, could it seem just because she finally found someone who loves and accepts and sees her, that she's feeling, at least she's feeling that way about Celeste. So when Celeste asks her to take down her husband because, oh, then we'll be together.
Yeah.
You know, I could see that sounding like, well, why wouldn't that work? You know?
Yeah. I think it sounds to me, and I don't even have the follow-up information about Celeste, but obviously there is definite potential for Tracy, or there was definite potential for Tracy in her life to do harm to herself and to someone else.
I do have more of an update on her, though.
I do believe that it sounds to me like it was just kind of a perfect storm that came together.
Exactly.
Celeste and Tracy.
It's right. That's exactly right.
I do believe still what I believe.
Eileen and us.
Tyra?
Yes.
Tyra. Yeah.
Tyra.
Sorry.
with a IA. It was spelled weird.
It was like Tyria. As of right now, I'm still of the belief that this crime probably wouldn't have happened.
Yes.
Had Celeste not come into Tracy's life. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. But go on.
Well, I mean, it's like, I mean, I'm not really sure how I feel about this. I mean, I'm going to be honest, because there's this one website that I found. It's KENS5.com, which is just a local, like, San Antonio news site. And the title is SA Residents, which is San Antonio Residents, Help Convicted Murderer Bounce Back into Society. So, released on parole, Tarleton has been transitioned back into society. And this is, like, you know, obviously a few years ago.
Yeah.
It's not right, like, recent. It has been exciting and hopeful, but it has been difficult because you don't have any easy access to getting a job. You don't have any easy access to renting an apartment because you have that felony status strapped on you, said Tarleton. Sunday, San Antonio community members held a fundraiser for Tarleton. It was an opportunity to hear some readings from letters Tarleton wrote in prison. In exchange, those who attended donated about $20. Though it might not seem like a lot of money to some people, for a woman trying to transition back into the community, it was very appreciated. The people who, quote, the people who know me and my story have been very, very supportive of me, and I would not have been able to make it without these people, said Tarleton. So that's my wrap up on her, basically.
Okay. So.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how I feel about that, though. Like, it's a little bit warm and fuzzy, but you're also like, I'm surprised that people were that, like,
yeah,
coming to her aid, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, she, at the end of the day, she committed
murder.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, she did.
I mean, and yeah.
I understand that she was manipulated, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I am not loving how I'm feeling right now with regard to her ownership of
the whole thing.
The
you're
whole
right,
thing.
You're
yeah,
right.
I'm not loving
it's like
how Yelena I'm feeling
Rendell's
about that
situation, where it was like, you know, she just kind of got out and has just been trying to just be like, that part of my life is over now. It's like,
exactly,
we're not even going to take ownership.
Yeah,
for it
it's
or
kind
apologize.
Of like, it's kind of like I just, if I'm taking what you just have taught me and told me, mm-hmm. if I'm just focusing on that, it's kind of like she's going, well, boo-hoo, these are the hardships I have to suffer.
I'm the victim here.
I'm the victim of all of these things. Well, mm-hmm. no, honey.
You killed someone.
You killed someone. This is punishment for what you've done and the mistakes that you've made in your life. You have to live with this. Mm-hmm. And you know what? You're in a better situation right now that you have the opportunity to live mm-hmm. with these mistakes because you literally took that away from someone else.
Yeah, exactly. So, kind of moving over to, you know, Celeste's life after the fact. Ironically, Celeste's daughter, Jennifer Beard, was shot just like Stephen Beard.
What?
She was shot. The shooter received a lesser sentence than Celeste, even though the severity of his crimes, including one man and injuring several others. Now, this is an excerpt from the book, obviously, that's defending her, so it's going to sound yeah. very, like, Celeste-sided, but,
yeah.
you know, it's a great description of, you know, what went down. So, February 2019 article in the Austin American Statesman said, a man who had dressed as Santa Claus for a Halloween party he helped throw has pled guilty in connection to the fatal shooting of a party guest and now awaits sentencing at a punishment trial. At a sentencing hearing Tuesday, Randall Jones, 33, stared down at the defense table and never looked up in State District Judge David Wahlberg's courtroom as witnesses pieced together the events that led to the intoxicated Jones firing 12 rounds from a .40 caliber handgun inside a North Loop home on Avenue F in 2017.
Did she die?
She does not, because one person did die, and I will mention their name.
Got it.
She ends up not dying, but it's not great. I don't know if it's, you know, they do say there are fates worse than death, right?
Oh, yeah.
So he pled guilty to one count of murder and two counts of aggravated assault, and in doing so opted to bypass a jury so that the judge would hand down his punishment. Wahlberg could have his ruling. So I'm during this, it said he could have his ruling by the end of the week. So I'm not sure exactly where that goes. Let me see. The murder conviction carries a sentence of 5 to 99 years in prison. Michael Ted McCloskey. Five to 99.
Yeah. Somewhere in that range.
throw a dart at the board and exactly. wherever it lands. Who witness called a hero for attempting to subdue Jones. His name was Michael or Ted McCloskey. So he jumped out, tried to subdue him in the back bedroom before the melee. So basically what had happened was there was a party. It was like 6 a.m. He's in his room. He's getting pissed off. He grabs a handgun and is like, fuck you motherfuckers. Get out of my house. It's too loud. And this guy, like, tries to stop him. He, like, runs at him, you know, hero style, and, like, tries to push him down. You know, he ends up getting shot and killed in the melee, as they call it.
The melee. That's a good word.
It is a good word.
Not used often enough.
No, it's not. I even, like, read it, and I was like, melee, that's that word. Yep, that's what that is. So this kind of just goes on. If you want to know more, like, it's a lot of detail about how they kind of pieced it together. So According to the police affidavit, though, I wanted to put this out there. Jones shouted, "I did not want this to fucking happen. Why did they have to fucking push it? Why did they have to fucking go to my room? Why did they have to go to my room? They're not paying for it. Why do I have to deal with it? I just want to go to sleep and be left alone." So he's still arguing, like, "I just shot all these people because they were being loud. Like, why did they have to be loud? Like, it's their fault. Like, you know."
Dude, that's an extreme response.
That's what I'm saying. Cause and effect, yeah. Man.
Yeah. So, no, I don't know of any rational human being that's going to side with you when you're like,
"You killed someone and shot two others. What are you doing?"
Yeah. Sounds to me like he and Tracy ought to... Actually, no. Again, perfect storm.
Maybe not, yeah.
No, maybe not.
Take that back.
I feel like they have a lot in common, but yeah, control, alt, delete.
They could just be pen pals. Okay. Yeah. So two other guests were badly injured, as I mentioned earlier, including Jennifer Beard, who lived with Jones at his home. She is connected to a well-known Travis County murder through her mom, Celeste Beard, who is serving a life sentence, da-da-da-da-da, all the things we already know. Beard's identical twin sister, Christina Fitz, testified that Beard needed 10 surgeries to recover from 2 wounds to the stomach. Her core muscles were so weakened from the attack that she struggles to find stamina needed to walk. She cannot work and relies on Fitz for financial support. And her sister was quoted in saying, "If I couldn't help her, she'd be homeless."
Oh, that is very unfortunate. And she wasn't a villain that we know of in either of these situations. Even if she were a villain, she wouldn't deserve that. But it makes it even more unfortunate and more sad that she's had these experiences in her life. And it sounds like it's not good.
It's not good. And I mean, unfortunately, I mean, Celeste is in prison. At least there's that. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't have much else other than... I just wanted to read a little bit of this because this is an archive website and it's called freeceleste.com. And I have to assume that it's obviously somebody else, you know, taking what she's writing and putting it on this site, yeah. Right? Because she's in prison. Yeah. But it's just, I mean, simply Celeste, there's like a brief overview of the case. There's a "To My Daughters" in the beginning, the killer, the crime, the outcome, the actual cause of death. And I didn't read all of this, but I just wanted to read you just like the beginning because I just kind of like just want to eye roll a little bit. "My name is Celeste, and I have been convicted of a crime that I did not commit. I have always been a good-hearted and gentle-natured person, and generosity has always marked my life. I love people and animals, and I love my family," as if her family aren't people. "I also loved my husband very much. My daughters were and will always be..."
Which husband?
Oh, shit. That was... Ooh, and that's shade.
Well, she replaced him less than 6 months after he died. And
Five husbands.
And I'm not saying... I mean, I'm not talking trash about people who have been married multiple times.
But she did say, it's like, obviously, we... That's so funny.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. That is not intended.
Did you not love the one that you married after him?
Exactly. Exactly.
Ah.
Please continue.
"Or is that the one that you mean? Who knows? My daughters were and always will be my world, and I did the best I could to be a good mother. I labored them into the world and nurtured them to the best of my ability." I'm sorry, I just can't. "Whatever mistakes I made along the way, they were not made out of malice, but out of imperfection and inexperience. Please understand that I have made many mistakes, both as a mother and a wife, but this crime was not one of them. I am quite certain that many people incarcerated with life sentences may say whatever comes to mind to gain their freedom, but I am not one of them. I did not commit this crime, and the facts indicate that I did not commit this crime. And if I would have had a fair trial, I would not be incarcerated today. I am imprisoned, and although that is a victory for the prosecution, it is an injustice to me because I am absolutely innocent of having any involvement with this crime. I was very naive to the legal process in the past, but I have since educated myself to understand the many gross injustices of my trial and how a square peg was forced into a round hole."
Uh-huh. You're really entertained.
I'm sorry, I didn't read this far when I actually like found this website. I'm only gonna read a little bit more because I'm just Oh, wow. Okay. I encourage you to read my story to get a sense of who I am, who I was, and if you can help, it would be greatly appreciated. If you cannot, that is okay too. In the past 10 years, I have experienced myriad emotions, and most were negative. I have even been angry with God to the point of blaming him for my circumstances. She's blaming God, y'all. She really is clinging to this so hard.
She really is.
Oh.
I'm
going to stop there. Like, there's no, I'm just going to keep going with the ridiculousness because I can't stop myself. But yeah, that's fully like a paragraph. Yeah. I read one paragraph of this entire website.
So, I mean, I legitimately.
Oh, and I also want to add in too, like, this website, I think it's made by like a fifth grader because you can scroll down. It's like, click here to listen to Celeste's favorite song. And like, click here to listen to the song that Steven and Celeste danced to at their wedding. And it's like, why are we harping on Steven? Because he's the one that you had murdered because you got, you're married. Your last name is Johnson now.
Yeah, she kept the last name of.
It's on the book title.
Yeah, so she didn't. She didn't even, like, annul the marriage.
No.
I wonder how that relationship is.
That's a valid point. I wasn't able to find anything because I was curious in knowing that, like, that was on. I mean, obviously, they still talk, I suppose. Yeah. Her Facebook, too, is a lot. Like, it's a lot of, like, if you want to pen pal with Celeste, like, write us here. And
oh, fuck that.
There is no liking. There's a lot of people just randomly commenting, like, lies, lies, and more lies. And I'm like, well, you know what? At least people see it, you know?
So, all right. There are definitely situations in which people are wrongfully convicted for crimes. That happens.
Sure. Absolutely.
It does. It absolutely does. And I don't know this woman personally. I don't know what type of life she's lived other than just kind of this narrow view of the facts that we were given as part of this docuseries and the things that you've researched. Mm-hmm. So part of me wants to say, okay, benefit of the doubt, it is possible that she was somehow also victimized. It is possible. Do I believe that? Hell no.
Yeah, they can definitely, here's the thing, they can definitely make the case of, oh, Tracy was so, like, out of her mind, unrealistically in love with Celeste, and Celeste wanted nothing to do with her. However, you can't deny the fact that had Tracy never met Celeste, this never would have happened.
Exactly.
Period. Like, she is the factor. She is that X factor. So, at the end of the day, it is her fault. Like, she should be paying for that, regardless of what the defense could be.
I agree. Now, what I'm struggling with right now, and I'm not really sure why now versus literally after the two times
that
I watched
it.
maybe it's because I have more information about who Tracy is as a person. Sure. Maybe it's the amount of caffeine that I've had or lack of sleep or whatever. I'm just truly right now considering how I feel about the fact that the two punishments are so vastly different.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tracy's done her time. She's out. And like I said before, like, she's still living.
That's a good point. I didn't really consider that.
Yeah, she's still living with, like, some aspect of the punishment. Like,
she did 10 years.
Her opportunities are limited, et cetera, et cetera, like we talked about. But yeah, she did 10 years. Celeste is literally doing a life sentence.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
And I think it's because I've come to that place with, you know, the research that you've done and shared with us. I've come to that place where I do believe that this was the perfect storm.
Mm-hmm.
This was like what happens when an unstoppable force meets an immovable object. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
So I think that the punishment across the board should have been
A little more even. I get that.
That's where I'm sitting right now with it. Yeah.
Because we've seen, it's almost like maybe they wanted to make an example of Celeste. Like, you know, this is a high profile case. We can't just give her a slap on the wrist. Otherwise, the media is going to have a field day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It could be.
Which I have to say that it's refreshing from the perspective of, like, an LGBTQIA+ person, especially in Austin, Texas, that they didn't say, well, we're going to make an example of this, like, angry, violent lesbian.
That's
so
valid.
I can appreciate the fact that they didn't go that route.
Because if she had the wrong person investigating her, it could have gone a totally different way.
Yeah, and she might not have had the opportunity.
And she might not have
the
told
plea.
The story. So this could be completely... I guess it's better this way anyways, for all the alternative.
It is. It is better this way. And I am sure that Tracy is going to suffer repercussions for these mistakes that she's made for the rest of her life. It does just right now feel to me very unbalanced.
Yeah. But isn't it wild, though, that it's like the universe was like, oh, haha, like you wanted your wife, your husband shot and killed. Well, got one for your daughter. Like, that's so messed up.
That is terrible.
It's like that was the most shocking thing. There's quite a bit that you can actually read about this case. And that was one thing that I was like, I'm so glad that I read that. That breaks my heart, but I'm so glad that I read that, because that would be a piece of information that I'd be bummed if I had like missed out on with like the updates, because that's just wild.
And that's part of the reason why I think it's so important for us to just look into these cases and see whether or not do a deep dive, see whether or not there are any of those like little nuggets of information that the queens, kings, and folks,
because we all wonder, what happens after. So you're right. I'm glad we're doing that.
Me too.
I am.
You know what else makes me happy?
Being here with me.
Yes. And all the folks.
All the folks. That's
And having this amazing opportunity.
Yeah, this was fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much, HLN.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much. And again, if anybody would like to watch this episode that's quite literally premiering, like, today, as we speak.
Right now. You could have even paused and, like, been watching and then came back.
For sure. But you can go to hlntv.com, and there's a banner at the top of the page that says how to watch HLN. Because
it makes it... you know, idiot proof for us, because we like the interwebs.
Yeah, and you are gonna want to see this thing.
You are. It was I definitely want to watch more, which is probably what I'm gonna do when you leave.
That's probably what I'm gonna do when I get home.
We'll text about it.
For sure. All right, so that was our super special episode.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll have the opportunity to do these again.
Yeah, for sure. We'll be looking for more.
Yeah. Thank you, Ashley, for doing this with me.
Thank you, Wayne, for doing this with me. I loved this.
Yeah. And thank you, folks,
for listening.
Yeah.
And all the things.
And all the things. And if you enjoyed it, please let us know in all the usual ways.
Like, subscribe, 5-star ratings. Find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We've got our Patreon.
Merch.
Merch.
Merch, merch, merch,
merch, merch, merch. I am so excited about the merch.
Yeah.
I still can't decide what colors to get everything in, but I'm going to make that decision by tonight, because I need to get some shit. I need to get it together. I keep changing them, though.
Yeah. All right. I mean, if you're going to go out and slay, you should do it in our merch.
Absolutely.
But we will just leave you with that. We will leave you with...
go out and slay, queens.
Just not
each other.
I'm going away, but I won't come back.